Some of you may have been in there before. I've been with them about 17 years, and so I've been out here once. I think Dr. Jacobson and Dr. Duke came out last time, and they presented kind of a slideshow. Well, his slideshow had his own pictures and stuff in it, and we don't have a generic slideshow. But I thought what might be beneficial to you is we'll go over a little bit of what skin cancer looks like. We have a few samples over here, so you ought to grab some of these things before you go home. I'm just going to leave them here, and you can take whatever you want. And then we have some derm books over here, too, and so some people find that interesting. Skin cancer is really prevalent. We see a ton of people. We take off probably, 20, 30 tumors sometimes a day, each individual person does. And so it can be kind of a sneaky thing. It can also be one of those things that you've known's been there and it's hurting. The most common lesion we treat over there is precancer, which is these scaly little lesions that people get on ears and noses. They're called actinic keratosis. And I believe I have some pamphlets that you can take and maybe look through those while we're talking. But so you can pass out.
Trust me.
Oh, does this work pretty well?
It will work perfectly.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So yeah. So anyway, that there's a pamphlet there that's a yellow pamphlet. We could give everybody one of those. The yellow pamphlets talk about all these types of skin cancers we get. Precancers, like I say, are the most common one. They're not cancer yet, but they're the stepping stone to it. And 1 in 10 of those will turn into a squamous cell skin cancer. And when it starts turning into a cancer, usually they hurt because when you press on them, they feel like a sticker in your skin. Sometimes they're a big bump. Sometimes they grow really rapid, too, after a while. The most common type of skin cancer is called the basal cell skin cancer. And so if you look through those yellow pamphlets, the second row down shows a little type of skin cancer. And these usually are kind of almost like a jelly-looking thing, and they're really shiny, pearly-looking growth. They can be completely flat, but they don't hurt. And that's the problem with the basal cell skin cancer, is it doesn't hurt. And so when people have spot on them that keeps bleeding and it seems like it heals up, and then it bleeds again, those sometimes are basal cell skin cancers. The third one there is called a squamous cell skin cancer, and that's the one that rises out of the precancer. And so that one usually hurts. We see tons of precancers every day. The basal cell skin cancers, there's about 1 million of those in the United States every year. So basal cell skin cancer is very common. It is not a real big health issue. It's not going to travel, metastasize in your body unless it gets huge. And so for the most part, you don't have to worry about them. Our big problem with them is when we cut them out, if it's on the end of your nose and they took off something the size of a dime on the side of your nose, they have to figure out how to repair that. So if we can catch them really early, that's the good portion of it. Squamous cell skin cancer is a little more aggressive. We only see 250,000 of those in the year, so only a fourth of the same number of basal cells. Actually, basal cell, if you took all the basal cells that we have, they outnumber all the breast cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer, every other cancer combined. So we take a lot of those off. Melanoma is the bad one, and that's generally pigmented, and so it's kind of a darker lesion with some irregular borders. I'm not sure if we had another pamphlet. There's a blue pamphlet. Did you guys? Yeah, so, and you guys all have one of those. That just kind of goes over these ABCDs of melanoma. So these moles on the side here are all normal. They're kind of round, organized. They may be a little bit different colors. And they're usually right around the size of a pencil eraser. But if they start changing a lot, where it starts growing from one side to the other in a disorganized fashion, if it has a lot of notching or smudging in the border, if it has lots of colors, kind of blotchy colors in it, or it's losing pigmentation and it's kind of erratic in how it loses it, or if it's big for size, so if it's, size of a thumbnail. Oh, did you get one? Okay. Yeah, and then also if it's something that's evolving into something else. So they give you that asymmetry, border, color, diameter, and evolving as ABCDs of melanoma. Those are the ones that are kind of the heartbreakers, because if people find them too late, a lot of times they can kill people. And the lesion starts out somewhere, and it's not always in a mole that's existing. A lot of times, you get more melanomas coming up, arising new in the skin, not an existing mole. And so you have to be careful of any new mold that you get on you. The rate of success on treating that is based on how fast you find it and if it has any growth. So they start growing horizontally across the skin first, and then they start diving down. When it starts diving down, then it can send off little guys throughout the body, and then that can set up shop somewhere else, like in a brain or bone, and then the treatment on it's not really good, and so that's the reason it kills a lot of people. But there are a lot of mimics for melanoma, too, and so everybody gets some of these things called barnacles on them, or you've heard the word barnacles? Probably we get a lot of people punching us when Dr. Jakeson actually had a lady slap him the other day when he told him she had a barnacle, she backhanded him. She is 90, so she got away with it pretty easy. But so people don't like those barnacles, but a lot of those, you should look in those areas too, because you don't want a wolf in amongst the sheep. You know, if you have something that's a dark spot and it looks like everything else, but it's actually a melanoma. So those are good to have people check those. As far as other things, there's things called dysplastic nevuses, which are moles that are kind of irregular looking. And some people have lots of moles on them that look irregular, and they're a little more prone to get these melanomas. If you have a lot of this dysplastic nevus, it's something that you should go in and get acquainted with a dermatologist. And a lot of people get their skin care done at a family practice doc, and I know it's one-stop shopping, but if you have some real problems with skin, you should go see a dermatologist, because the little nuances that you see with cancer are sometimes really fine, and we'll have people come in from a general practice office who they looked at them, they sent them over for a suspicious lesion. Well, that turned out to be a barnacle, but there were 3 or 4 basal cells on them that they didn't even recognize. And so it's always good if you do have any kind of history of skin cancer, you should probably see somebody in dermatology. You know, what I thought we'd spend some time with today is that I think would be more helpful for you is we can take a look at any of you, and we can kind of run in here to the kitchen, shut the door a little bit, and maybe just take a look at anything that you might have questions on. And I think sometimes when you talk about cancer, everybody has a spot or two on them that they say, hey, I've been wondering about this, and it's something if you want, we can take a look at any of those type of things today. I don't know if you have any questions on skin cancer. These are books that are just some general basic things about skin disease, and if anybody wants to look at these, they can. This here, a lot of times you wonder how, after they cut a cancer, how they're going to fix it. And there's lots of pictures in here how they take a hole and they will advance a flap up into it. And some people may be interested in that. But those are the kind of books that when I got into dermatology, my brother-in-law would come over and he would just pour through the books and he would look through one page and he'd get disgusted and he'd have to turn the page and he'd have to turn the page again. It was like a car accident. So a lot of these pictures in here are a little bit graphic, but if you're interested in some of those things, it's kind of interesting how they do repair. You know, you got a big hole here, and how do they fix that hole and make it look normal without pulling down the eye and a couple different areas. So, so we know who the sick people are when they start picking this book up here, huh? Let me see if was there any questions. These are barnacles here, and so you probably all have seen these before on people's backs. And so this lady here's got a bunch. We always show that picture, and people kind of gasp, and then I tell it, it's the nurse right there. Don't make too big. But so those are the barnacles there. And then this one here. So we can freeze these. If you got a ton, though, they hurt, and everybody comes in, and they'll say, hey, I want all these things off, and I'll start freezing them, and we get to about 6, and they kind of go, okay, I think that's enough for today. I'll go home and lick my wounds.
I've had basal cell twice.
Uh-huh. Well, the statistics are that if you get one basal cell, that you have a 30% chance every year of getting another one. So usually you'd probably come in at least once a year and have yourself looked over. I take them off people all the time who come in for something else, and they have a tiny little spot here, and we look at it, and it's a basal cell, and it's only 3 millimeters, and we are able to just put a tiny bit of numbing in there, flip it off there, do a little tiny bit of cautery, and it's done. But if you wait till you start seeing them, when you start noticing things, then usually they're fairly good size. They're pretty substantial. And then the Mohs procedure, if we have a skin cancer that's on you, and it's somewhere where we don't have a lot of skin to move, If it's on your back, we've got plenty of area there where we can cut it out and we can give it some decent margins. But if we have something on your nose and we want to protect as much normal skin as we... There's a procedure that was named after Fred Mose, a surgeon who was also a pathologist. And he would cut around what he could see of it. And then he'd take that little circle of tissue and he'd map it out just like a clock. And so you'd have 12, 3, 6, and 9. And then he'd look, he'd have a slide prepped and he knew where the markers were at on that. And then when he would get in there, he'd say, oh, there's a little bit coming off here at 2 o'clock. And he'd go take another little slice at 2 o'clock. And if that still had a little bit past that, then he'd go take a little bit more until he got that area clear. It's kind of like a doing a potato, you know, you get the dark spot and you take it and then you go past the dark spot a couple more strokes and you know you're good. That's how technical it is, potato filler. So with that Mohs, then they say, hey, we've got that and it's got a 98% cure rate. And so once you know you've got that clear, then you can fix it. In the past, all we did before is we cut it with what we thought was clear. And we had to take a little bit more, and then they'd fix it. And if you had to fix your nose and you had to do this really intricate sewing and everything, then you got the piece of tissue back a week later, and it said, oh, it's still involved. Then you had this person with this fixed nose, and it still got cancer there. So nowadays, most procedures, if it's appropriate, nose, ears, eyes, anywhere that's smaller, if it's a reoccurrence of a similar cancer, then they do that on there. Yeah, so you've had it done, yeah. So it takes a while, too, because they come in here, they'll cut it out, and that just takes a few minutes to numb it and cut out what we think is there. But then we take it to a technician, and she preps the slide and makes it, a slide out of it. Then he has to read them. And so he's seeing somebody else while she's doing that, and you're kind of sitting there reading a magazine. And then once they get it clear, then they come down and say, hey, we got all that, and then we need to just figure out how we want to repair this. Some repairs are big enough that we don't take care of them. We'll send you over to a plastic surgeon. We got some good guys here in town that will fix them. And so that's, you know, if you're kind of worried that whoever's taking care of this isn't going to make you look, I told one guy, says, I'm going to make you look like Robert Redford. And he said, what, old? So, you know, they got some really good competent people in this town that can help you with those things. It can bother you, but it's more that you when you get wet for a long period of time, a lot of these little barnacles or the skin itself becomes almost like a riverbed of dryness, and most people don't lotion their back really well. So if you get out of the pool and you shower off the chlorinated water and then you were to put a layer of moisturizer on, usually people don't have any problem. But it's getting in and out of the water every day, and you know if people shower a lot, as we get older, we don't have as much oil in our skin, and so we tend to dry out quicker, and so you won't have...
You live in a dry environment.
Yeah, and you live in probably the lowest humidity in the nation is some of these Nevada, southern Utah areas. And so people get in there, and they get in the shower, and they got their dial going, and their zest in there. And you, in the wintertime, you're going to take longer, hotter showers because you got arthritis, and it's nice. It feels good to be in that water. You'll lean against that, and you decide, while I'm in there, I'll really soap up. And so you soap up, and then you get out, and you dry out, and then you can hear all this cracking of your skin. And then we get people coming in and going, hey, my back itches terrible. It's been itching for a while. And we say, do you ever use lotion? What kind of soap do you use? And a lot of times that's the cure for it is just a good lotion and a mild soap and less time in the hot water. But that's kind of hard. Or they got a hot tub, and they're in there kind of boiling themselves. And
yeah, we do that.
And so...
shoulder, and it looked shaped kind of like a little itty bitty volcano.
Yeah.
It was just this little thing, and it was all scaly and dry and flaky looking.
And
I think that was a squamous cell.
It could have been a squamous cell. Yeah, squamous cells usually they'll come up. They can even grow a horn on the top. So you have this little mound, and it has a horn growing on top. And had a guy come in maybe a year ago or something. But he had a horn that was probably about that long. But I've seen horns that almost look like a pronghorn antelope on an old pictures, you know, where people didn't get treated too often. It wasn't rutting season or anything. He was still growing it. Yeah, and so it will catch. And then some of those barnacles can get the same way, but... Lesions can actually, when we look at stuff, a lot of times we can tell you right off the bat what it is, but sometimes we're kind of vacillating what we think that is, and a lot of times we'll have to do And occasionally we're surprised that it was, we thought it was this and it was that. And so you do have some lesions that it's really hard to tell unless you take them off. Well, we get a lot of people doing fingernail surgery, or the worst one's the black salve, and you'll have people who do black salve. And black salve is some kind of a chemical concoction that people believe if they put it on there, it'll eat away just at the cancer and leave everything else. And then you have a thing, but usually it's a big old scar. And then they come in here, and if it was a melanoma and they treated it with that, then there's not a lot of evidence there that we can say, hey, you had melanoma, and this is what we need to do to kind of give you the best chance. And so there you're kind of left, you know, with that. You could put battery acid on stuff and it still burn a hole and still have a part. So there's no real, and it's generally through, you know, some neighbor that knew somebody who this fell off. And so I'd be kind of careful of those. If people ever have a problem paying for cancer and stuff like that, our office is great as far as if they try to knock it down to as little cost as they can. And then if you had to make payments of $5 a month or something like that, they would still take that $5 and not send you to collection. So we really hate when people can't afford cancer, and you know, if they really need something off, we can take it off and try to work with them.
Yeah,
basically we identify it first, and we say if it was you could get rid of several things freezing them, but if it was a cancer to begin with, sometimes you want to know that you got to the basement of it. So a lot of those will numb it up. We'll take a little bit off and scrape it, make sure we're to the bottom. Really depends on what we think the lesion is. If it's a cancer, a lot of times we'll want to take some of it, make sure it's not real aggressive. If it's a precancer, we know we can freeze that. Or if it's these benign barnacles or warts or whatever, skin tags, we know we can take those off. But, yeah, you're always kind of operating under the guise that if you're doing stuff like everybody else does it, if they're just freezing things. We have so many people come in our office who have a huge tumor, and it's because they've lived out somewhere and their family practice doc was shooting it with freeze all the time, and it kept coming back. And by the time we get to it, it's a big old lesion, and so we have to do a big Mohs correction on there, and that requires plastic surgery. But had they froze it once and it came back real quick, and if they had taken a little sample, they would have found out it was cancer and that it was kind of growing. Some things can be almost like a iceberg where you have just a little bit on top, and by the time they get done doing that Mohs, sometimes it's a pretty good-sized lesion. So you just have to be kind of careful. And when you start seeing all the little nuances with cancer, you start treating things differently. We'll go to medical meetings, and they'll have a 500 dermatologists in a room, and they'll put up a slide of something. They'll say, how many people would take a biopsy of this, and how many people would maybe watch for 3 months and have them come back? And you know, majority of people are fairly conservative. Maybe I'd watch for 3 months, but then we find out it's a amelanotic melanoma, which is a melanoma that's kind of an albino melanoma, and it doesn't look like anything. So you have to be there. The degree of suspicion goes up by how many things you get back that were kind of weird, and so a lot of times we send things off. Yeah, the gray kind of brownish ones. Freeze. Yeah, they're called seborrheic keratosis. They're barnacles.
Yeah, gray. I mean, are those pre-cancers?
No, so those are actually get those from being English, Irish, Danish, Welsh, and over 30. And we'll throw any other European country in there you have. But basically, they come up in different races too. Morgan Freeman has a bunch on his face. He has those little freckle things, and that's called. What is it? Dermatosis papulosis nigra is what his are called, but it's just a different. Dermatosis papulosis nigra. Yeah, and that's the other thing with dermatology. We throw out names. So, you know, if you get a spot on here, we call it chondrodermatitis nodularis helicus chronicus. And that's where you get kind of a little cartilage burr from sleeping on one side. And so they can charge you more if they can really give you
a name.
Yeah. Dermatology is all kind of names, descriptive names of what it looks like and where it's at sometimes.
My son has a birthmark on the side.
Yeah.
But at one time the doctor said I should have that taken off because it can turn into...
Yeah, you know, if you have a congenital nevus, which is a birthmark that's big, sometimes... If it's greater than 10 square centimeters, which if you took a bunch of, you know, 10 sugar cubes and put them together, if it's bigger than that, sometimes they consider removing those. A lot of them that are smaller than that, the chances of them turning anything is pretty nil. So you're almost better sometimes to kind of watch them. And if you were to photograph it, it's going to grow as he is a young boy. It'll get bigger as he gets bigger. And it may get more hairy as he gets down the, you know, more mature. But for the most part, they stay about the same size and color, and you can have somebody kind of monitor them. And if you have some of these big nevuses, they become, we have people have bathing trunk nevuses where the nevus is completely over their entire buttocks and up their back and stuff like that. And sometimes they look at doing skin grafts and stuff on those. But that's not us. We send those to university and these other places. And, but if you have anything odd, we can usually point in the right direction too. All righty. But does anybody have anything that they would like us to look at today? We could, and then, yeah, and then if you want to look at any of these books up here and grab some samples of some of these things, we brought a few things there. That would be good.
Is that the soap you recommend?
And then we probably ought to take this mic off while we're back here. Holy! You know, sunscreen, for most people, there's a spectrum of activity that you get in most sunscreens, but it doesn't cover a really broad spectrum of them. So if you can find something with zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, when you look on a sunscreen, it will have active ingredients in it. And so if it sounds like it's a mineral, like titanium dioxide or zinc, then that's probably a better sunscreen. That's the old nose coat, you remember, where they get the white nose? And so they micronize it, so they make it down into smaller particles, and they put it in these bases, and they can spread it on. It still gives you a little bit of opaqueness to it, but they have better methods now of getting it on. And that gives you the best. It's like putting a bunch of little napkins on your face so you're covered. The other ones work through chemicals, and those are the ones that run in your eyes and kind of make you burn. And then lips, they are starting to make more chapsticks with sunscreen in them, so an SPF. We do get a few people who have sensitivities to certain chemicals, and so they can put something on and they start breaking out. But for the most part, a hat and clothing is always much better than sunscreen. So if you know you're going to go out for the day and you had a wider brim hat, and they make all these shirts now with SPF 50 or higher in them, and a lot of those, if you wear those kind of baggy and with the arms kind of open and but leave the long sleeves down, you're cooler than the person out there in the T-shirts. Typically because the sun's beating down on you and causing redness, and so those are a little easier. And then they have vents in them, so they have, you know, this fabric that's kind of layered over vents, and so they breathe much easier too.
How many of you have seen the picture of the young kid with the baseball cap on backwards and he's going like this?
That's right.
Turn it around, kid.
Yeah, baseball caps, you know, Dr. Duke says you don't you spell hat, H-A-T, and not C-A-P, and so caps don't give you coverage. You know, they'll cover that, and that's the reason you'll see when we look at women, they tend to have more cancer on their nose and upper lip, and it's because they have a lot of hair right around here, and so we don't see much on their necks or their ears, but they don't wear as many baseball caps as boys. And so when boys grow up, their mom doesn't want to comb their hair, so they slap the hat on him, do the girl's hair, and then they don't want anything to touch the girl's hair. But so she'll go around and have her nose burn all the time and her upper lip and maybe her cheeks, but usually they have bangs that kind of shade this area. So with guys, we'll see more cancer here on the ears, the sides of the neck, and with women, we'll see more skin cancers on the nose. And that's kind of unfortunate because, you know, women are a little more cosmetically worried about things, but when you have to take a cancer off the nose, it's kind of one of these spherical objects. When you make a change in it, a lot of times it changes it. And when you see, when you get it in harsh light, sometimes you can see the changes there. So, yeah, so if you can find something early on you, then those are pretty easy. And sometimes we just have to take a tiny bit off and scrape it, and we're good.
How much exposure? Somebody said 20 minutes out in the sun with just the top of your hand.
Oh, for the vitamin D? Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know specifics on how much you need. I know that for the most part, you've had generations grow up who were covered, cowboys who were covered, and, you know, you didn't see. They're worried, I think, more about lymphoma and a few of those things. I don't know if I can give you a great answer how much surface area you'd have to have, but typically you're going to get probably enough through hands and face, a little bit here and there from incidental sun. We live in an age where you have so many vitamins that are supplemented into everything too, that you're going to get some help there, even if you weren't thinking about it. Fruit Loops, wonderful product. Yeah, that's right. So, how many people are interested in us having this look at you? Because I have to be out of here probably in about half an hour or something like that. But we could take a look at you real quick. And then if you want to browse through any of these books, they're like that road accent, like it's you look at something.
Oh, yeah.